Welcome to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramie.
Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome back to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. I'm your host, Mark Daly. It's Friday. That means it is time for another Formula One race weekend. FP1 for the Russian Grand Prix at the Sochi Autodrome gets going in just over 2 hours as I sit here in the studio right now. Of course, you guys are downloading this a little bit later. Unfortunately, this isn't live, but still, I'm sure you're just as excited as I am to get back to the racing. And can you believe it? We only have 7 races left in the season. It's gone so quickly. It seemed like, what with all the craziness going on out there with lockdowns and quarantines and pandemics and everything, it took so much longer to get the season going. Then we started going and the races came really, really quick, one after another. And we're getting away from all these triple header weekends, which have been completely awesome for a fan's point of view. No, it's a lot of work for the people involved in Formula One, of course. But now we get back to a sort of more of a normal schedule where we have some back-to-back weekends, and then we have weekends in between when there are no races at all, which I hate. But still, you know, with 7 races left, it's gone so quickly. And well, you know, sit back and savor it. The championship isn't officially decided, of course. I guess we could make the argument that we might as well just give Lewis Hamilton the championship right now. But there are other guys out there that are intend to do something about it. Whether or not they'll be successful, that is another question. But still, that's what we'll talk about that and more on the show tonight. But before we do, since it's been a couple of weeks since that exciting weekend that we had at Mugello for the Tuscan Grand Prix, let's just go down the World Championship standings in both the Drivers' and Constructors' Championships. On the driver's side, Lewis Hamilton on top, 190 points, ahead of his teammate Valtteri Bottas in second, Max Verstappen in Red Bull, 110 points, way back there. Lando Norris for McLaren, and then Alex Albon in the second Red Bull round out the top five. Alex with 63 points. And, you know, in that midfield, that sort of best of the rest drivers, there's a lot of guys fairly close in the championship, unless you're poor old Sebastian Vettel, who's languishing way down. Well, I mean, he's got 17 points now. I mean, that's 13th. What a terrible, terrible year it's been for him. Of course, Charles Leclerc, his teammate, doing a little bit better, but not that much better. Charles, only 49 points in the championship right now. Only good enough for 8th. I mean, whoever thought we'd be talking about Charles and Sebastian Vettel in the positions that they are. I mean, what a crazy year it's been. And then over on the constructor side, of course, there's no surprises here. I mean, it's pretty much par for the course of what we've seen for the past number of years. Mercedes on top, 325 points. Red Bull second in the constructors with 173. McLaren, Racing Point, and Renault round out the top five. And Renault, the gap from Renault to Ferrari, not quite 20 points, 17 points. Ferrari just on the outside looking in with 66 points, not even good enough for top five. So anyways, there we go. That's as it stands right now. Of course, it's going to change in a couple of days, but I think at the top, it's going to stay pretty much status quo. Anyways, like I said, there's a lot of news to cover. I hope you guys enjoyed the report card that I did with Mark Hamilton from Flash F1 last week. You know, whenever Mark and I sit down, and we talk all the time away from the show. I mean, we're good friends away from the podcast. We talk Formula One and a lot of things besides, a lot of NBA, a lot of basketball, if you guys are into that as well. Anyhow, I hope you enjoyed that. I mean, it turned out to be 2 hours. I mean, if we didn't put a cap on it, we probably could have gone on for 4 or 5. But you know, even in an abbreviated season, there are so many things going on, and there's never any lack of material to talk about. Anyways, I appreciate all the messages and tweets that we got and emails. It seems like we struck a chord with a lot of you, and you know, a lot of you agree with us. Some slight differences here and there, but on the major topics like Mercedes, Red Bull, Ferrari, those I think we all pretty much see eye to eye, and as well with the drivers for those teams. Anyways, let's get into the news for this week. And Ferrari ex-team principal Stefano Domenicali is going to become the new Formula One CEO. So Chase Carey, who's been in that position and has been there for the past couple of years, is going to be stepping aside at the end of this year. He's going to have a revised role in Formula One. But anyways, Domenicali has not been officially confirmed by Formula One, but the teams were apparently in where the news was broken to them on Tuesday of this week. So like I said, Chase is going to stay involved in Formula One beyond the end of this year in a somewhat different position. And then Domenicali's agreement, it still hasn't been finalized with compensation and things like that, but it's going to be done very, very soon. Anyways, he was team principal at Ferrari between 2008 and 2014, and he was the sporting director for the Scuderia from 1998 to 2008, and he was one of the key figures in that run of six consecutive constructors championships way back 20 years ago when they were on top, and Michael Schumacher was also winning all those drivers championships. And it's kind of funny sometimes we seem to think, and you hear these things too, oh, Mercedes is ruining Formula One, all they do is win, and it's the same every year. Well, Formula One tends to be cyclical that way, and 20 years ago, people were saying exactly the same about it wasn't Lewis Hamilton and Mercedes; it was Michael Schumacher and Ferrari. Anyways, like I say, it tends to change over the years, but just to insert a different name and a different team here and there. But anyways, that was it's equally impressive as Mercedes has been for the past several years. So were Ferrari 20 years ago. Anyways, after he resigned from Ferrari back in the spring of 2014. Domenicali joined Audi as a vice president of new business initiatives, and then he moved over to Lamborghini in 2016 as CEO. And during his time at Lamborghini, he also retained a role within the FIA as the president of the single seater commission that he took that role on in late 2014. Anyways, so I think it is very interesting. I mean, he's one of several or a couple of key figures from that era for Ferrari who now hold top spots in Formula One or the FIA. I mean, Jean Todt, who was a team principal way back in the glory days of Michael Schumacher, he's the president of the FIA. Ross Brawn, of course, he is the managing director of motorsports at Formula One. So it's very interesting to see how it goes. Anyways, Chase has been he's been the CEO, and that he's been there ever since his deal was finalized in January of 2017. And took over from Bernie Ecclestone after the Liberty Media bought him out. And Chase has done a number of impressive things in the past couple of years. I mean, for me, the biggest has to be the new Concorde Agreement, which comes into effect for 2021, goes to the end of 2025. Got all 10 teams to sign on to that, and in the middle of the biggest global economic crisis that we've seen in a long time, brought on by the COVID pandemic. I mean, that is something, and the fact that it was agreed to relatively quickly and without the usual or traditional drama that we've seen over the years and decades. Also, the cost cap is another one, and he's brought on a number of new races, including Vietnam and reviving the Dutch Grand Prix, and then also this year, again in the middle of a pandemic, he was able to save a season. And way back several months ago, we were thinking, okay, well, what is the bare minimum that we need to get to hold a world championship to make it official? And of course, the magic number was 8. I mean, we got 17 races, and I think that is absolutely phenomenal. The cost cap. So I mean, Chase has done a lot of things, very, very good things for Formula One in a very very short amount of time. And then as Mark and I were talking about last week, I mean, there's different things that we're seeing to attract different demographics, different newer fans to the sport. They've got a completely different approach to things like social media, F1 TV, and all things like that. I think it's more dynamic, it's a lot more attractive, especially to younger people, because that was the thing that always kind of bugged me about Formula One. When it came to Bertie Ecclestone, he never really cared about things like that, and I can't can't remember the exact quote, and I'm going to sort of parse here, but he did say at one point that his ideal fan was some young fan who doesn't really have any money, but a 70-year-old guy that has a lot of money, who's already, he's got a ton of it, has already made his mark in the world. Well, that's great. I mean, that guy might have a lot of money, but compared to, somebody who's in their early 20s or 30s or whatever, I mean, they're going to be a much longer-term fan, don't you think? But I think that Formula One has definitely improved on a number of fronts. But very interesting to see that Domenicali is coming back into Formula One and going to be taking on this new role. We'll move along now. There's one of the issues, and this of course was a big one, the big crash that we saw in a very dramatic and incident-filled Tuscan Grand Prix of Mugello a couple of weeks ago, and that big crash that we saw in the start-finish straight after one of the safety car incidents, that was something else, and that really was really, really scary when you think about it. I mean, Carlos Sainz, Antonio Giovinazzi, Kevin Magnussen, and Nicholas Latifi were all involved in that start line incident. I believe was it 12 drivers? I think it was. Were all reprimanded for their incident or their part in that role. And I think that it's. It's a testament to how safe Formula One cars are, but you don't really want to test the safety in that way. And I think that the fact that only Carlos Sainz had some bruising on his hand is somewhat miraculous. But anyways, Gunther Steiner, the team principal at Haas, says that Formula One should consider the NASCAR style restart zone. And I think that's really, really interesting. Okay, so for those of you that aren't fans of NASCAR, they have a designated area of the track where the leader must start accelerating, and he feels that could be a good solution. I mean, Valtteri Bottas was actually cleared for any of the role that he could have played in that, where it was put to a lot of the guys further back in the racing order, sort of accelerating and standing on the brakes and things like that. Anyways, Steiner had to say, quote, the restart line was far down the straight of Mugello, and some people obviously took a chance and tried to have a run at it. I don't think anybody did anything wrong. I fully agree with that one. It was just circumstances. Going forward, to avoid these things, I think we need to look at where to put the restart line and maybe also to think about a restart zone. I'm not an expert in these things, but other series do it like that to avoid these things from happening. I think it's worthwhile to look into it, but I'm sure it'll come up on the agenda of the sporting working group, end quote. Yeah, so I think that is a really good idea. And sometimes I think it's a little bit kind of confusing. I think if you're not a fan of Formula One, you don't understand how the restart it was actually structured and how it works. It can be a little bit confusing. So I mean, there's that one side of it. I mean, the safety issue has to be the most important, and I think that would be a very, very good idea for them to look at and implement something like that. So the GPDA, the Grand Prix Drivers Association, has written a letter to Formula One race director Michael Massey, and they've actually asked them how they can actually improve the safety car restarts in the aftermath of that big crash at Mugello. They're going to discuss it at the driver's briefing at Sochi later today, and then also at the GPDA meeting that will take place after it. So Romain Grosjean, who is the director of the Grand Prix Drivers Association, and his co-director Sebastian Vettel, they talked through the whole incident with their president of the GPDA, Alex Wirtz, who's also a former Formula One driver, and one of their legal representatives, before they actually wrote this letter and issued it to Michael Massey. Grosjean said that he had some discussions with the people involved on the GPDA side, and fittingly and very contemporary of them in their GPDA WhatsApp group. Can I get in on that? So afterwards they did decide to write that letter to Michael Massey to find out first of all to convey their concern about it, and also to find out what they can do to make it better and implement some solutions. So Grosjean said, quote, I don't think there was anything standing out in Mugello in terms of restarts. It was a lot of small things that led to a big crash at the end, but maybe a few tweaks and some of the rules could possibly help. And that's what we wanted to discuss, to avoid such a scary moment. And I guess we were kind of lucky with everything that we didn't end up with someone being hurt, because it was quite a high-speed crash, and also a car flying into the fence, which could have been a bit naughty. end quote. Well, that's an interesting way to put it. Anyways, Kevin Magnussen, who's also, of course, Grosjean's teammate at Haas F1, he was one of the four drivers that was actually knocked out of the race as a result of the crash. He also has called for a look or an investigation or whatever you want to call it into the safety aspect of restarting a Formula One race in such a manner. Anyways, K-Mag had to say, quote, I was reacting to the car in front of me. The car in front of me was reacting to the guy in front of him and all the way down. And everyone is trying to react. At the end of it, someone gets caught out and can't react. And so that causes the accident. I think it would be good to look at how we do these restarts so we can avoid accelerating and then braking again, making sure that once we accelerate, then that's it for good. I don't know what the solution could be, but it would certainly be worth looking into if we can make it safer, end quote. So absolutely. Safety has to be the number one priority when it comes to Formula One. Anyways, time for a break here on the Overtime Media Network. And I want to talk to you about our sponsor for the show today, and that's MyBookie. And winning season is back at MyBookie. And that means doubling your first deposit. Winning season also means insane props, epic bonuses, and the craziest cross-sport wagers. At MyBookie, winning season means watching live sports and betting on live sports all season long. So, of course, the NFL has returned, and that means action-packed Sundays and huge cash prizes. So get in on the action by using my promo code OVERTIME and double your first deposit. New players can get up to $1,000 in free play designed to add more excitement to the sports you love and the games you bet. Bet with the best this NFL season for your chance to win big. So once again, use promo code OVERTIME and double your first deposit. Your winning season begins today, but only at MyBookie. And this month, Overtime is going all in for our listeners. We're going to give away $500 cash to one lucky person who takes advantage of this offer. So when you make your first deposit at MyBookie, take a screen grab of your MyBookie account and email it to overtime@advertisecast.com. That's overtime@advertisecast.com. And once again, that's $500 given away at the end of September. All right, well, welcome back to the show, and Toto Wolff should get out of Mercedes right now, according to former team owner and team principal Eddie Jordan. And this is a little bit to do. Jordan was commenting on the fact that Toto was still negotiating a new contract to Mercedes that is going to give him a more senior position within the organization, and he's still going to have his responsibilities as team principal, but the new role and the new changes in his position there would actually allow Toto a little bit of a freedom, so he wouldn't have to commit and go to attend races in person as much. I mean, he said as much just only recently that it certainly is something that's been wearing on him, and it's obviously a big commitment of time. So there has been some speculation over what his future with the team might be. He invested in Aston Martin, which he said that was purely a personal thing. But then there's also been, Jordan said that a Mercedes sponsor and partner Ineos is about to buy the team. This story has actually been rejected by Toto. And it is possible that Ineos may actually take on a minority stake ownership in Mercedes instead. Anyways, EJ said that he said that even though there is some stuff swirling around Ineos at the moment, he actually thinks that this is just the perfect opportunity for Toto Wolff to actually just make a clean break of it and actually get away from Mercedes right now. Anyways, he was speaking to Ziggo Sport, and he said, quote, the only thing that I was really sure about is that Ineos will buy the team, and for sure in that package with the people of Mercedes, and particularly the new chief executive. It is a well-known fact that Ola Källenius, who is the new CEO and the chairman of the group, has had some issues with Toto in the past. And as you know, Toto, to be very honest, he is right up there with the likes of Frank Williams's, the Ron Dennis's, and all these guys, you know. He's being sensational, so it's time that he moved on himself, end quote. That's very interesting. He did go on to say, quote, I'm sure he's getting tired of the situation. He's won of all these championships, and he's created a myth around Lewis Hamilton and indeed the team. In life, you've got to remember that there is a very good time to get out, and there's a very bad time to get out. And a very good time for Toto is now. If it was me and I was his advisor, I would say, quote, get the hell out of there, please, Toto. Take the money off the table. It will never get as good as this in the future, end quote. Well, you know, there's a couple of things there. And number one, yeah, it's never going to be as good as it is right now for Mercedes. I mean, they've won every world championship in both the drivers and constructors since 2014. They're absolutely on top of the sport of Formula One. They're completely dominating. They are the team that everybody wants to be. They have the everybody wants to drive. And what that they've done over the course of the past number of years is absolutely incredible. So, I mean, it will come to an end at some point. That is just a fact. It can't stay this way forever. I mean, we've seen it happen in the past. We were talking about a little bit earlier about how Ferrari was the dominant team 20 years ago in Formula One. So these things do come in cycles, but right now they are on top, and there is no clear direct threat to them at the moment. I mean, Ferrari came close over the past couple of seasons, and for reasons we've been talking about quite a bit on the show recently. Obviously, Ferrari is not in that position right now. Red Bull is close, but not quite close enough to really push Mercedes on a consistent and regular basis like Ferrari had done over the past couple of years. And it basically, I can see the point that he's making. If you're going to walk away now, do so when you're absolutely at your pinnacle. I mean, having said that, this could go on for several more years before another team really gets their act together and can really challenge them. Who knows what the future is going to bring? I mean, we're going to have this season and next season where we're basically having developments on the 2019 cars, and then it's not going to be until 2022 that we're going to see the brand new formula. And then over time, we're also going to see the effects of the new Concorde Agreement and the cost cap and all those different things like that. So I guess you could say that the indicators are maybe there. I think it's interesting that Jordan seems to have an inside line, or so he thinks, on the fact that Mercedes is going to be bought outright by Ineos very, very soon. That is interesting, even though that seems to have been resoundingly rejected by Toto. So who knows? If it were me, and of course, this is very, very easy to say when you're on the outside looking in, but when you have that, all this success under your belt, and you're on the verge of becoming or signing a new deal that gives you a bit more flexibility in your job to travel less and still do all the things that you do, why would you want to walk away from that at this point? So to me, I can see it on one point, but on the other hand, it doesn't really hold a lot of water with me. And so anyways, the one person who ultimately knows this, of course, is Toto Wolff himself. But I mean, all the indications that he's given is that, he still wants to stay with the team and continue what he's doing. Otherwise, I mean, why would he be negotiating a new deal? Anyways, Eddie Jordan, he had plenty of things to say. He actually feels that Hamilton should leave Mercedes. So I think he's pretty much, in the camp of gutting the big guns out of Mercedes and moving them on. And get Lewis to move over and join Max Verstappen at Jordan. To join Max Verstappen at Red Bull. He actually thinks that it would really be an interesting and fascinating combination between Hamilton and Verstappen. I've said this before too. I mean, it's one thing to have Lewis in the Mercedes and Max in a Red Bull, and then say a Charles Leclerc in a Ferrari. It would be fascinating to watch these guys if they all had the same machinery. So why didn't he say, why can't Max go over and join Hamilton at Mercedes? Well, I guess that's a little bit different. Anyways, I guess it's got more to do with the fact that that Lewis, he's also very much like Toto. He doesn't have a deal with the Mercedes for next year. He's negotiating something, or will. I mean, he said a number of times there's no priority to do it right now in the season. They can get it done later in the year. In the same interview with the Dutch channel Ziggo Sport, Jordan had to say, quote, "I personally believe that Lewis should go to Red Bull and not to Ferrari. I'll tell you that it is perfect, because the best young driver of all Formula One at the moment is Max Verstappen. There's no question about it. His style, his speed, his intellect, his control on the track, also his arrogance, and the Grand Prix winners and Grand Prix champions need a level of arrogance. That is obvious, and he has that. Whether he got it from Yas or whatever, I have no real idea, but the facts are that he has an unbelievable talent, and what I believe is he has a teammate like Lewis Hamilton, then I do believe he would also be able to beat him, end quote. Well, you know, that is interesting. I mean, like I was saying just now, it would be something to see all these guys in the same, machinery, the same equipment, and see how they could go head to head. I mean, the thing is that we've seen with Max is, and I've said this a number of times, I really feel that he's a guy that is able to push the car that he has beyond the limits that he has. I mean, he's clearly much further and better than his teammate Alex Albon, because I mean, while he's miles ahead of his teammate, he's still tantalizingly close to the Mercedes, but not quite close enough in most circumstances. I mean, you know, he did very well, of course, and took full advantage of the situation at both races in Silverstone and got a win out of one of those races because the issues that Mercedes were having with the tires and the graining and punctures and all that. I mean, that was quite something. But still, I mean, to see him and Lewis in the same team, and it's not going to happen. I mean, we've sort of been down this road a little bit already, because earlier this year, when it was made known that Vettel wasn't going to be going back to Ferrari, there was a lot of speculation that a natural place for him to go would be go back to Red Bull, where, you know, of course, he won 4 world championships. And Christian Horner, team principal at Red Bull, basically, he dismissed that idea, saying that that they just couldn't afford the salary of a driver like Sebastian Vettel. So, I mean, you can look into that and kind of, extrapolate that statement a little bit further, because if they can't afford the salary for Sebastian Vettel, could they therefore afford the salary of Lewis Hamilton? And I think that the obvious answer there is no. However, I mean, if the situation came up, would they be able to secure funding through sponsors or wherever internally in their company? I mean, who knows? I mean, that's always a possibility. I mean, who's to really say one way or another? I mean, it could happen. However, I just don't see it as extremely likely. I mean, I would love to see these guys go head-to-head more often. But, you know, the thing is, too, that perhaps Jordan has overlooked that, Max is, he's quite headstrong. And I think having these two guys in the same team, be it a Mercedes or be it a Red Bull or whatever, I think that there would be a potential for, fireworks there. I mean, that we've seen some head-to-head combat, between these guys over the years. But just the fact that Mercedes is just that much better than Red Bull is it doesn't really happen on, a consistent and regular enough basis. It's not weekend in, it's not weekend out. Max has obviously had his moments, and he's won races here and there over the past number of years. But to put them in that same team, I just get that vibe that could become really, really nasty, because Max is not a guy that backs down from anyone. And if you think that Hamilton and Rosberg was bad, and I mean, Rosberg had his moments. He certainly by no means was on the same level as Lewis Hamilton, but he was closer to Hamilton than I think Valtteri Bottas is. And we saw with all the incidents that Hamilton and Nico had over the years, that there was too many kind of comings together and accidents and tire punctures and things that we saw when these two guys clashed on the track, and that was a very, very bad situation. When Niki Lauda and Toto Wolff and all the brass at Mercedes said that it actually came down that it was as bad that they would actually rescind the contract of one or both of those drivers if it didn't improve. I mean, ultimately, it was I think that situation was solved easily, I guess, by Rosberg's shock retirement after he won the championship back in 2016. But I could really see fireworks like that in a team if you had a Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen. Sure, it would be great to see these guys racing and fighting it out in identical equipment, but I think it could be really, really it's got the potential to be quite something, fireworks at the very least. Anyways, Honda's made some changes to their engine after the issues that Max had at Mugello and Monza over the past couple of races. I mean, he retired from both races. He didn't actually score any points. So, I mean, it wasn't like he was closing the gap to Lewis in the championship at the top there, really, really quickly. But, I mean, he was sitting there nicely and comfortably in second, and that has become a little bit shakier here, with two DNFs over the past couple of races, and it was really dramatic at the Tustin Grand Prix when he got off the line and quickly lost power. I mean, he had a great start at Mugello, but quickly lost power, and then, you know, before the lap was even the race was half a lap old, Max was in the gravel, and that was done. So anyways, Honda's made changes to their electrics and also the software of their engine to avoid any repeat problems from the past couple of races. So Honda's actually spent a lot of time investigating what wrong at those two events, and they came to the conclusion that the problem wasn't related to the main components of the engine, including the MGUK and the MGUH, and they've actually concluded that they think it's a combination of issues relating to the electrics and the software came together in a bit of a perfect storm to cause the problem. So we'll see whether or not they get that sorted out for this weekend. Anyways, time for another break here on the Overtime Media Network. Please don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment. All right, well, welcome back to the show. We're going to stick with Red Bull for a little while longer. And Alex Albon is—he's trying to avoid any speculation and discussion on his position at Red Bull in the media, because he says he avoids reading the media because he doesn't want to be distracted, basically, about all the chatter and discussion about his future with the team. And I think we really talked about it last week on the show, just the results compared to Pierre Gasly in 2019. And Alex Albon in 2020 through the first half of the year, very, very similar type of performances. But, it's fascinating where Gasly struggled last year in Red Bull. We saw Alex Albon really do well at Toro Rosso. You know, now fast forward a year, the positions are switched. We're seeing Alex Albon struggle a little bit at Red Bull, and Pierre Gasly is doing quite well at AlphaTauri, which is, of course, is this year's renamed of Toro Rosso. So of course there are going to be those discussions because Red Bull has done it not once but twice and has made a mid-season drivers change, and of course anybody will make that discussion that switching Kvyat for Max Verstappen was a bad idea. But as we've seen, with this Gasly and Albon situation, the longer that this kind of goes on and one continues to do well where the other one struggles, of course, that discussion is going to be had. Anyways, Alex says he's not really worried by a lot of the negative speculation and discussion that he should be replaced by Gasly. And he said that he really has faith in his team, that they're going to support him. And also he has the support of Christian Horner and also the big boss at Red Bull Racing, Helmut Marko. And he had to say, quote, "I don't look at the media. I know there's always going to be talk about it. It's a hot topic for you guys. You just have to move on from it. My trust and confidence comes from speaking to Christian or whoever, or Dr. Marko personally, and I feel a lot of support from both of them and from the whole team as well. Certainly, I'm relaxed. I know I need to improve. I want to improve, and I'm keen and I'm motivated to do that. So with all the support from the guys around me, I'm happy with where I am in the team, and it's more you could say that the media creates the noise," end quote. So yeah, I mean, fair enough. In the media, things tend to get dragged up or discussed, and of course, I mean, it's a hot topic, and why would they? I mean, it is a legit and a fair discussion to have, and where he may struggle and Pierre Gasly continues to do well. I mean, he won a Grand Prix just a couple of weeks ago at Monza, the Italian Grand Prix. Of course, it was a bit of a unusual circumstance, what with safety cars and red flags and all the things going on in that race, just like we saw at Mugello. And then, of course, on top of that, what with the pit lane being closed and Lewis Hamilton getting a 10-second penalty. It was really extraordinary circumstances, but I don't want to take anything away from Pierre Gasly, because I mean, he did very, very well after the restart, especially at the end there. He did exceptionally well to fight off Carlos Sainz. If that race went a couple laps longer, who knows, maybe Carlos might have been able to pass him. But like I say, I think that it's a legit discussion to have, and until he finds his groove and is maybe able to close the gap closer to his teammate Max Verstappen, and be more of like a make that partnership of Albon and Verstappen more like Ricciardo and Verstappen was a couple of years ago, then of course these discussions are going to continue. So, you know, I guess now is the you know, the big question is, okay, is his position safe? Or, but you know, when you hear other things that he feels like he's got the support of the team and the discussions that he's had, you know, is that sort of like the you know, what do you want to call it? You know, the kiss of death almost. You know, he's almost, you know, it could be go quite the other way. But who knows? I mean, he's still a young driver, but ultimately he's going to be judged on results. And the one thing I do know is his position may be okay and safe for now, but it definitely won't be in the long term if he doesn't start to, you know, pick it up and start delivering. Regardless if, you know, he's matching Max for speed here and there on different parts of the track or is faster than him, ultimately it comes down to what he's doing, where he finishes on the race, and he needs to be scoring more points. Certainly he should be higher up in the race order. I mean, if Max is you know, regularly on the podium, then the expectation, I'm sure, internally in Red Bull themselves as well, if Max can do it, if he's got a car that that's getting him on the podium, why aren't you there or thereabouts as well? Anyways, just moving, taking a bit of a sidestep and sticking within the Red Bull organization, Pierre Gasly says that AlphaTauri has big ambitions to match the big team of Red Bull Racing. And this is very interesting because I think that you know, we're seeing AlphaTauri really punch above their weight, and they're doing some very good things there now. And there's a bit, I think, of obviously a big difference in the two drivers that they have there. I mean, Gasly, he showed what he had in Formula One. Or his talents as a driver prior to moving to Red Bull. I think what with the whole situation of Danny Ricciardo going to Renault kind of forced their hand a little bit and maybe had to bring Pierre Gasly up into that big team a little bit earlier. That was good for both of them. And he certainly did look like he was over his head. Anyways, I mean, he's back now at AlphaTauri. He's been there again almost for a year. And it is interesting to see that, you know, what this team is actually doing. They've obviously got a good power unit in the Honda in the back of that car. And Gasly says that he actually feels that that the team is in a much different and a better position than when they were, you know, where they were in the past. And he had to say, quote, there's a clear will and a lot of ambitions coming from AlphaTauri. I think it's a different situation to Toro Rosso Red Bull and how it was before. I think the project is exciting. As I said, at the moment, the Red Bull team is clearly the top team of the two, but I think the ambition of AlphaTauri is to at some point match their performances. And this means we also need the resources and have bigger facilities to have this sort of thing, end quote. So, you know, it's interesting. Maybe that they have these ambitions, but again, it comes down to how much money they have, how much they're going to be able to put into it and develop the cars and design them. But who knows? We are going to go shortly into a brand new uncharted area of Formula One as the cost cap comes in. Teams just can't come in and spend whatever they want anymore. Like there's no tomorrow. I mean, that this cost cap is going to be steadily decreased over the next couple of years. And it's really going to be interesting to see how that levels the playing field, if it does at all, and see if that, you know, evens out the performance. Are we going to see a team like AlphaTauri, even though they're within the same same, I guess, parent organization of Red Bull? I mean, they are two separate teams. They're based in different places, and they are two completely different cars. And well, I mean, apart from the Honda engine in the back, so that definitely is going to be one of these storylines to keep an eye on once we go into the new era of Formula One. Okay, well, moving ahead, we're going to talk a little bit now about, a lot about Racing Point. And Sergio Perez said that he's actually disappointed that now that his departure from Racing Point / Aston Martin has been confirmed at the end of the season, he's disappointed that the team is starting to hide things from him. We knew just before the Tuscan Grand Prix of Mugello a couple of weeks ago that Perez would be leaving. well, with Sebastian Vettel signing a contract to go there for 2021. And now, so Perez, currently he's the guy that doesn't have a seat to go to next year. And he's still looking at his options to stay in the series for next year. So, of course, he's been at Racing Point and Force India, as it was when he joined the team back in 2014. And actually, he actually helped to restructure his contract and things like that, which helped save the team and allow Lawrence Stroll and his consortium to come in and take over and buy the team a couple of years ago in 2018. So, of course, yeah, it's tough, right? I mean, of course, you can make that, you know, there's always going to be that discussion. Well, you know, these things happen in pro sports. It's tough, but that's life. Yeah, you know what? That's fair enough to say that. But for a guy like Sergio, I mean, he's kind of gone a little bit above and beyond the call of duty for what he's done at this team. So it is a bit difficult. So, I mean, It is a rough situation, and I can imagine that, you know, he's been that guy. He's been a good team guy, not just from the point that that, you know, he did what he needed to do to help kind of, you know, help align everything for that takeover for, you know, from Stroll a couple of years ago. But still, I mean, he's always been a good team guy there, helping to develop the car. I mean, he's had some good performances as well. Anyways, Sergio had to say, quote, "We are focusing on the 8 races ahead. It's going to be so crucial that we deliver every single point. Is very important for the Constructors' Championship. We can still have the best season in our history. If we manage to finish third, I think we're all going to be very disappointed if we didn't get that third place in the Constructors' Championship. Obviously, since the news came out, some people inside the team tend to hide things, which I don't think is great. I think at the moment, we just have to be as transparent as possible to make sure we can achieve our goals and make sure we can score as many points as we possibly can," end quote. So yeah, I mean, obviously, this is a guy that's looking at the immediate future and knows that that his time with the team is obviously coming to a close. I mean, we just got a couple of months left in the season now. I mean, season ends middle of December. So, I mean, he's obviously looking to the future, and he may obviously not end up with a, you know, a team that is currently in a good position, a strong position as Racing Point is. And they've come, you know, they've been in a bit of a no man's land for the past couple of years. You know, they were slowly, I mean, they weren't in a great position, were they, when Stroll's group came in? I mean, they'd obviously, you know, sunk down the order. I mean, they'd always done a little bit more with a lot less compared than the other teams, but it was quite noticeable in 2018 through that first half of the season when Malia's money was drying up, and they were slower and just weren't as competitive and as good as they were before. But once they got that injection of cash, you noticed in the latter half of 2018, that speed, what we kind of come to expect, may not have been the same as it had been over the past couple of years, but there was a noticeable increase, improvement and increase in the performance of the car. Last year, I think, was a bit of an in-between year in 2019, their first full year under the new new ownership. And then this year, of course, you know, they went a completely different year, a different way. Of course, we've had that that whole pink Mercedes and that whole brake duct copying scandal thing situation behind us. But this was like the first year of the reboot, and certainly they've really come a long way. I mean, to be where they are, sort of that sort of bottom half of the running order and the hierarchy in Formula One, to be potentially the best of the rest away from Red Bull and Mercedes this year. I mean, that is outstanding. That is quite the achievement. I mean, I know that they've taken a step back in terms of performance of that car before they were able to figure out the aerodynamics and get it to work. So the hard work that they put in is starting to pay off, and certainly it would be really disappointing for Sergio Perez to know that he's leaving at the end of the year. I mean, it's going to be an improvement on where they've been regardless, but I think the way that he's looking at it, he sees that third place is definitely within grasp, and to fail on it or to not achieve it would be very, very disappointing. But also, just it's interesting too, you just look down down the pit lane a little bit further, and just a little bit different. The philosophies that you see in the Formula One teams. You've got Carlos Sainz, who's leaving McLaren at the end of the year to go over to Ferrari to replace Sebastian Vettel. Pardon me. McLaren said that unlike Force India Racing Point and Sergio Perez, McLaren, they're not going to hide or freeze Sainz out of the technical matters for the rest of the year, even though Sainz is leaving to join Ferrari for 2021. So that's interesting because Andreas Seidel, who's the team principal at McLaren, said, quote, "At the moment, Carlos is still fully involved in everything we're doing here at the track and also back home. We clearly have the philosophy that that's the right way forward in order to get the maximum out of Carlos also. In the end, we share the same goals as here. He wants to get maximum points and results, and the same is happening on our side. That is valid for us as a team. And to be honest, I think we will go ahead like this until the end of the season," end quote. So, you know, that is interesting, the two positions that both of these teams have. But, you know, like I say, professional sports can be rough, and certainly, you know, it can't be a pleasant situation for Sergio Perez to be in. Anyways, time to take one final break here on the Overtime Media Network. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment. All right, well, welcome back to the show. Time to start shutting it down. But before we do that, there's still quite a lot to talk about. Just sticking with Carlos Sainz and Sergio Perez. And this is an interesting one because Carlos Sainz says that he has been left, a little angry at the way that Sergio Perez has been forced out of Racing Point for Sebastian Vettel and just the whole situation that he finds himself in there. You know, I find this a little bit kind of ironic because Sebastian Vettel, I mean, he was kind of almost forced out of Ferrari in a similar way. I mean, it's sort of really, I think it's interesting the way that the news is coming out about the way that Perez is, you know, found out about the way that that he was leaving the team is very similar to the way that Vettel is leaving there, or was found out about the fact he wasn't going to be offered a new contract to come back to Ferrari next year, and he was out, and he's being replaced by Carlos Sainz. That's why I find it's interesting that, Carlos can see that. I mean, obviously he's sympathizing with a fellow driver, which is cool. You know, I totally get that and respect that, but, you know, I do find there is a certain level of irony there. Anyways, Sainz had to say, quote, "What Checo shows is that in F1, not everything is about your performance. Judging on purely performance, there is no reason why he should leave Racing Point, or they just don't want him. But in F1, there are other interests, things that come with performance that are very important. And for me, Checo's exit is a shame because the team that he has trusted in for so many years and that he practically saved from bankruptcy and that they finally get producing a good car for him is now the team that does not want to continue with him. It's a real shame. It makes me a little angry because I have a good relationship with him and I respect him a lot as a driver. It just reminds you that this sport is like that and it gives you very little in return, but this is one that we have chosen to compete and be professionals in and that you have to accept it," end quote. So there you go. It kind of makes sense that you can see why he is angry. But like I say, the parallels between the way Sainz is going to Ferrari to replace Vettel is very similar to the way that Vettel's now going to Racing Point to replace Perez. So yeah, you know, that's just my two cents. Take it as you will. Anyways, Lance Stroll is going to be the only driver who's going to get the upgrades on the Racing Point at the Russian Grand Prix this weekend. So you can see why Perez is starting to get a little bit bitter and angry about these sorts of things. So he's going to have the exclusive use of these upgrades at Sochi. And because the team actually, it's not that they're hiding anything for Perez. They just simply ran out of time to get it to him. I mean, he obviously, Stroll is the son of Lawrence Stroll, who, you know, is basically the biggest investor in the whole thing, and the man and the real push behind this whole rebranding of Aston Martin, both as a Formula One team and also off the track with the parent company. So, anyways, Stroll is going to be the only one getting the updates for the Russian Grand Prix this weekend. Anyways, sticking with Sergio Perez, Gunther Steiner, the team principal at Haas, says that taking on Checo Perez even though that he's fast and well-liked as a driver, both within his team and in Formula One as a whole, is not necessarily what he calls a no-brainer for Haas F1. So, of course, they're looking at their options for next year. They have Romain Grosjean and Kevin Magnussen as their driver lineup this year. They've had these same drivers for the past couple of years. And it's interesting because neither of them have a contract for next year. And, well, you know, honestly, when you have like guys like Sergio Perez, Nico Hülkenberg out there that don't currently have drives in Formula One, I think that if you're Gunther Steiner, if you're Gene Haas, that you got to look at guys like that, because I think that Haas is a team that they've kind of lost their way a little bit. I'm really hoping that that this new cost cap structure that's coming in this new era is going to be better for them. But regardless, I think that this is a team that just needs a bit of a reboot. I know that the car hasn't been the greatest. There's been some incidents between Grosjean and Magnussen on the track. I don't know if you want to bring one of those guys back out of those two. But, you know, for me, I think that that they need a breath of fresh air. They need a reboot, and I think they should replace one or both of those guys for next year. I mean, certainly Grosjean. I mean, no disrespect to him, but I mean, he's been in Formula One long enough. And certainly if it was going to happen for that, you know, for him, it would have happened by now. You know, I mean, he's a decent driver, but I mean, every once in a while, I mean, he does something that just really makes you just shake your head in disbelief. Anyways, but, you know, despite the fact that that Perez is out there, he's well-liked. He's a fast driver, and he's got a good sponsor and lots of support, you know, from the sponsors back in Mexico. You know, Steiner says, that doesn't mean that he's an automatic replacement for either Magnussen or Romain Grosjean. Anyways, Steiner to say, quote, "There's nothing at the moment which is a no-brainer because there are so many options. You need to make the best decision for the team mid to long term, not only the intermediate, because immediately we don't have an issue, but we need to see where we want to go in the mid to long term, because that is where the opportunity is, in my opinion. We need to fix that one. It's not just we need some quick cash for next year. We're actually fine with that. It's a mid to long term. How can we get better? How can we get the best out of the team? How can we get back to the performance of 2018? And better. I think there's more opportunity now with the budget cap coming in from next year's onwards and for the new regulations from 2022. For sure, Checo was a good driver. I would never doubt him, but he's the best for the mid to long term. I don't know. That is what we are discussing. So therefore, it is not such a no-brainer as it seems to be," end quote. So very interesting there that, you know, it's not a question of money and the fact that Perez would bring, you know, a lot of money with him from the sponsors. Apparently, according to Steiner, they have there's no issues on the funding front for next year, so that's good to know. But I think they're going to really do their homework decide what they're going to do with their drivers. But like I say, I'm firmly in the camp that that they need to replace one or both of those drivers at Haas. Like I say, that team just needs a reboot, and I think getting some good drivers, or at least one good driver in there for next year would certainly do a lot to help that reboot take place. Anyways, Romain Grosjean says that if he actually does lose his seat at Haas F1 next year, says he still has options in other racing series because, like I was saying, apparently Haas has a short list of up to 10 drivers, which, you know, in fairness, do include Grosjean and Magnussen, who they're considering for next year. But anyways, Grosjean has said that there are other options for him next year in different ones. He's mentioned IndyCar, he's mentioned Le Mans in the World Endurance Championship, Formula E. So, you know, he's obviously who knows if that's just a public statement that he's making, or he really does have some options available to him. So at least I think that the fact that he's coming out and saying that certainly maybe gives you an idea of what he's thinking may actually happen for next year. So who knows? I wouldn't actually be too surprised if Grosjean left and maybe Magnussen stuck around. Anyways, a couple of things here just before we touch on a couple of look very briefly at the Russian Grand Prix. But the Formula One team bosses, they've gotten behind an idea of rotating the calendar in the future so they get new and fresh races each and every year in Formula One. And I think this really has to do with just how good of a race we saw at Mugello a couple of weeks ago. So the idea of having this rotating schedule is to be able to visit new venues rather sticking to what has become a very rigid and inflexible calendar. And then we've also seen venues pull out just because of different issues that they have in hosting them and the costs and things like that. And I think it'd be good, if you can kind of keep a core group of races or cycle them around where you get a nice mix of the classics and new tracks, say like Vietnam, and then also even like the Dutch Grand Prix at Zandvoort. I think that would be great. Anyways, Toto Wolff said that they're switching up the calendar and rotating around would be a great idea and a solution for Formula One. I think that's one of the positives that we're actually seeing in this weird COVID landscape that we're living in 2020, is it's really forced all of us to look at things in a completely different light, and they're doing the same thing in Formula One as well. Anyways, Toto had to say, I think it's a quote, I think it's an interesting new concept that was born out of the necessity to have more races in this COVID era, and it's interesting. You can certainly see more vulnerability. Teams show up with not a lot of knowledge from these tracks, and you can see that performances are very different to a track where we've been a lot of times. You come to the Nürburgring, you come to Silverstone, and we've been there for every single year, so there's not a lot you can optimize just by being creative or being flexible in the thinking because we've been there so many times. Excuse me, end quote. So yeah, well, I mean, just from that that standpoint alone, I mean, Barcelona, I mean, the drivers can basically drive around there with their eyes closed because they test there so much, and it's been on the calendar for years. But I just like the idea that you could switch it up, have some different tracks every year. I think it would be fresh. I think it'd be a really cool thing to see in Formula One. I certainly hope that it gets pursued, because I think when we see tracks like the Nürburgring or Mugello or even like Imola, Turkey, for example, they've lost their Formula One race for whatever reason over the years. To get it back and have them and kind of rotate them back in and out, I think it works. I think it's something that they really need to take a look at. Anyways, just talking about the Eiffel Grand Prix that we're going to see at the Nürburgring in just a couple of short weeks from now. There are tickets on sale for it, and there's going to be 20,000 seats available for the race, and they actually figure that it's going to be a sellout. So it's going to be the first time we're going to see a race at the Nürburgring, and of course, this is one of these emergency replacements whatever you want to call it, emergency venues that came onto the calendar late in the year because of everything that we've, the turmoil that was brought on by COVID. And this is the first return to the Nürburgring in 7 years. And it's really cool to see. So, good to see that there's going to be fans here, but it's just really weird, just with everything's just happening, just with the pandemic in general. I mean, our prime minister here said in Canada, we're already into the second wave, and certainly we're seeing it around the world, but still, you can go and get a ticket to go to a Formula One race in Germany. Obviously, there's going to be physical distancing and all those things because, when I was there 20 years ago, there were a lot more people in there than 20,000. I mean, it was probably 120,000. I mean, of course, that was kind of like peak Schumacher era. So, of course, there were a lot of people there. But still, I mean, if you can get 20,000 people in there all socially distanced and all that good stuff in this COVID era, then that would be cool. And certainly it is good to see that that there are some fans coming back. I mean, we saw a few fans in the stand at Mugello a couple of weeks ago, but I still think it's amazing to think that they're going to put $100,000 into the stands in Turkey in several weeks from now. Again, that is not the capacity of the track, but goes to show you that what with some out-of-the-box thinking and following public health measures and those things and social distancing, that these things can actually go on for the time being while this pandemic is still a thing while it's still a health crisis and all of that. Anyways, just before we go here, just want to look quickly at the race. Of course, we're going back to Sochi for the Russian Grand Prix. This has been on the calendar now for quite a good number of years. It first came onto the Formula One calendar way back in 2014. And it is, well, it is an interesting track. It's not really a road track, but it kind of is, just the way that it's kind of sandwiched in between all those Olympic venues there, where they had the Sochi Olympics way back in 2014. It is a 5.848 kilometer or 3.634 miles long, 18 turns. Lap record is in race lap record is was set by Lewis Hamilton last year. That's a 135.761. The overall outright lap record was set at the 2018 Russian Grand Prix. I think it was in qualifying, must have been. I haven't written that down, but that is held by Valtteri Bottas in the Mercedes W09, and his time was an eye-watering 131.387. So it'll be interesting to see what times we see the guys set in quali on Saturday, see if they can come anything close to that. And predictions for this one, you know, I think this is going to be a tight race between Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas. Valtteri finished here P3 both in 2014 and 15, and then in 2016 he finished there in P4. Those two podiums that he had in 14 and 15 were in the Williams, as was the P4. And then the past 3 years he won it in 2017. I think that was actually his first Grand Prix win, wasn't it? In Formula One was 2017. I have to go and check on that. And then the last two seasons was he finished second. 2018, of course, there was that bit of a controversial moment when there was the team orders and he was asked to slow down and all that, but the fact is, Sochi is a track that that seems to suit Valtteri Bottas, quite well. He's obviously very fast there, and I honestly think that he's overdue a bit of luck. I think he's overdue a win. He certainly has had a bit of bad luck this year in some of the things that have happened. You know, the bad start that he had in a good number of races that have really put him further down in the drivers' championship away from Lewis Hamilton than obviously he would like. But like I say, this is a track that that he does well at, and I think this is going to be a race for Valtteri Bottas. I'm calling it right now. Bottas P1, Hamilton P2, and I'm going to go with Max Verstappen rounding out P3 for the podium. So there you go. And we'll come back. We'll talk about it on Sunday night in the post race report. And I guess that is a good segue to go into the outro for the show, because I'm out of time. And so again, as always, thank you so much for downloading and listening to the show. If you want to help support us, the best and easiest way is just to head over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you download and listen to your podcasts and leave a rating and review. And of course, if you want to get in touch with, the easiest way is to do so on Twitter at ScuderiaF1Pod or via email at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com. That's a wrap. Enjoy the race. I'll be back on Sunday night to talk about it and wrap it up with all of you. And until then, have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you again soon. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 podcast. If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to ScuderiaF1Pod.com. Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com.